This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. As always, I got Steve Smee joining us.
What's up, guys? Sunday night. What are you up to, Trevor?
I just got home from church. What are you up to?
Just doing all my errands and stuff. It's been a crazy, crazy week. We're almost to the end of the month. Thanks. Halloween is coming up.
You almost said Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Halloween. It is almost a Thanksgiving too, but Halloween is coming up. Do you give out candy on trick or treats or no?
No, I live in a condo, so we don't really have trick or treaters. What about you?
I don't know because I've never lived. This is my first year living where I'm living, so I don't know if there's any kids. I don't really have too many kids where I live. It's more,
older. Ready though, just in case.
I just because I'm not even gonna like. Leave my line on or anything. So
not a good idea, man. Your house is gonna get egged. No, seriously, dude. Yeah. We used to egg houses who didn't give out candy. Like at least have one bag on hand just in case.
How about you? They're gonna egg your condo.
Well, like I have a condo. Like you need a key to get in, so they can't even knock on my door.
Yeah. Well, I have a gate going around, so they have to get through the gate to get to my door. So that's the thing. Yeah.
Oh. Can they hit your house from the gate? Like it would.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. We'll see. If I see them walking around, I'll just hand it to them. You know. Okay.
Well, hopefully don't get egged. Are you dressing up? We'll talk about that, and then we'll get into our topics. Are you dressing up?
No, I don't dress up.
Oh, come on, Steve. You got to dress up.
No, I haven't dressed up in years, dude. I'm not into the whole playing dress up stuff. But I know a lot of people are into it. Like the geeks love to do that sort of thing. They dress up like Dungeons and Dragons or whatever.
I'm going as a tub of mustard.
Yeah, you said that before. Where are you going?
Well, there's like a graduate Halloween party at the university. So it'll be like with all like the professors and graduate students and things like that. It'll be kind of lame, right? But it's fun. It's like a fun socializing event. And there's always a prize for like the best costume, and so little people dress up. I might even win.
That's cool, bro. That's cool. Enjoy it, you know, because those are things you'll never forget, you know.
Yeah, well, it's nice to be able to meet with your colleagues for like an hour or two and not talk about work for once. You know what I mean? Like we're all so like it's like I'm sure you know what it's like because you have a day job. You know, like it's always business, business, business. It's nice for once to kind of just like veg out and actually get to know them as people.
Yeah, it's good networking, you know, for the future. So you never know, you could work with them one day. So
yeah, and like for me dressing up, I do that just because like life's short, you know, and you have to be able to laugh at yourself. You have to be able to have fun. So, you know, like I always enjoyed it, like when I would go to a class and I would see like a professor wearing like a Superman costume or things like that. So when I'm teaching on Tuesday, the students always get a laugh, you know, the fact that, you know, like, hey, a tub of ketchup's teaching me nutrition. And it's just, you know, it's just it keeps it real. So our first topic is whey protein supplements. So Steve, this is something I want to pick your brain about. So you don't use any protein supplements at all. Is that correct?
I would say that is correct. I don't use, the reason I don't is because it bloats me. It just like when I drink it, it just bloats me. It's just like dairy bloats me. Even if it's whey isolate, it still bloats me. So it just, I'm not going to put something in my body that makes me feel like shit. You know,
do you remember Dr. Amy, Steve?
Who?
She's been on our podcast a couple of times.
Dr. Who?
Dr. Amy.
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I was talking to Dr. Amy. We were talking about food sensitivities, and I have a food sensitivity to dairy products. You know, like my digestive system just sucks. Like I'm celiac, so I'm allergic to gluten. I have a food sensitivity to egg whites, I have a food sensitivity to dairy. Like, I'm one of those people who has a really finicky digestive system. So she, for the longest time, has been saying, you know, Trevor, you shouldn't be consuming protein supplements like that are dairy based, like whey protein or casein or anything like that. But you know me, Steve, you know, I'm cheap. I don't have to pay for my protein supplements. So I've been using them just because I got them for free. And also they're convenient. They taste good. There is, you know, quite a bit of literature showing, like, you know, the benefits of like a protein supplement post-workout. So she was really explaining to me, she said, you know, like post-workout, you're very inflamed, right? Because you just put your body through a rigorous workout. She said the last thing you'd want to be consuming is something that you have a food sensitivity to at that point, because you're going to be even more inflamed. What you want to be consuming after workout is something very anti-inflammatory. She said, you know, something like wild caught fish, maybe some rice, pineapple is really good because it has enzymes, which helps your body deal with inflammation. Same with papaya. So I think I'm going to do a mini experiment and try cutting out protein supplements completely. What do you think?
Well, I mean, are you getting inflamed right now from it?
Well, like, so the problem with a food sensitivity is it's an IgG antibody. A food allergy is an IgE antibody. So an IgE antibody, it causes an immediate response. You know, if you have a peanut allergy, you eat that peanut, literally within 30 seconds, you're feeling the symptoms and you rush to the hospital. With an IgG antibody, it takes days and even weeks for symptoms to develop. So, I mean, right now I feel pretty good. And like,
but if you're taking it like 2 or 3 times a day, every day, then I would think you'd be bloated frequently. And are you?
Well, okay. So that's the thing is, like, you wouldn't realize that you're bloated because you're used to it, right? Because I've been using whey protein supplements for years.
Yeah.
If I am experiencing bloating, I wouldn't know that I'm experiencing bloating because I'd be so used to it. I would just assume it as normal. So the only way I can see if I am in fact bloated would be to remove it from my diet for a month and then see if I feel any different.
Yeah, I'd give it a shot for sure. And, you know, see what happens for sure.
So I think that's a good idea. I was going to ask you, like, so then what do you do post-workout? Do you just eat a meal do you take any supplements post-workout? Do you maybe like slam some BCAAs post-workout or anything like that?
Well, right now, actually, I've been, I'll work out, blow out all my glycogen in my body, my glycogen stores, and I won't eat for like 4 or 5 hours.
Got you.
That's what I've been doing. And it's leaned me up pretty good.
So basically, maximize fat loss. Yeah, that's very smart.
I'm kind of riding the wave. And it's kind of, so I'm working out in the morning. Like I said, I'll eat a little bit in the morning just to have some carbs in me, do my workout, blow through those glycogen fast. But I have already so much mass. That's the thing. I have someone. I'm kind of like Mark Lobliner in that he's already so fucking big that he just eats in a deficit every day, like he told us. He just eats in a deficit. But if you're a younger guy and you're trying to put on muscle mass, that's not probably a strategy you want to do. You want to be more worried about putting on muscle mass and then later on worrying about leaning up so you can kind of
show up. You know what you should do? Okay, what you're doing is really smart. So basically, you're eating your carbs pre-workout, then you're working out, you're depleting your glycogen levels, and then you're not eating anything. So your body basically has to burn fat because your glycogen levels are depleted. Very, very smart. If you were to take a good nutrient partitioning supplement, something like N2-SLIN, after your workout, that would take whatever small amount of carbs you still have in your bloodstream into your muscles, and it would make your blood sugar levels very low, and it would put you in an even more favorable fat burning environment. So that's what post-workout, I would take some N2-SLIN.
Because I always take the N2-SLIN before I eat. So you're saying,
but also take it post-workout.
Okay. Yeah. I'll give that a shot too. That sounds like a good idea.
Because even though you're what you're doing makes sense scientifically, you're never going to completely deplete glycogen levels. It's just not going to happen, yeah. right? Yeah. So there's going to still be a small amount of blood sugar in your bloodstream. By taking like a nutrient partitioning supplement like N2SLIN, it'll take whatever small amount of blood sugar is left, shuttle that into your muscles, and it'll just make you in like that much more of a favorable fat burning environment.
Yeah.
And then if another good thing to do is after your workout, before you eat anything, I would do, you know, maybe 30 minutes of just like easy cardio, you know, just like walking or something like that. And that'll help even more with burning fat.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I do. I do cardio, especially this time of year. But I would say like, if you're the opposite, you're a younger guy, you're trying to bulk. What I used to do, I've never got into the whole protein shake thing. I've experimented with them and they always made me feel like shit. I can remember I drank a protein shake maybe 8 years ago and I drank it. And as soon as I drank it, like 20 seconds later, I ran outside and like dry heaved, you know, I couldn't handle it right away. And it was a whey isolate. So I've never gotten into it, but when I was bulking, when I was, you know, trying to push heavy ass weight in the gym, what I would do is that I would eat, I'd have a grass fed burger, before my workout. Then after my workout, have another grass fed burger with vegetables. And that would be kind of the way I was getting my protein, and I'd eat other protein sources, you know, throughout the day. But I really think the whole protein thing is completely overrated in terms of, you know, and this kind of gets into the question, how much protein do you really need a day? And it's like, we used to hear all the time, you need 500 grams of protein a day. That was like, oh, 500 grams of protein. That was the big push. And then now it's like, oh, you need 2 times your body weight. So a 200-pound guy needs 400 grams a day. And then you start hearing, oh, you only need 1.5 grams a day. And then, oh, you only need 1 gram a day. But honestly, like some days I only get, I don't get even 100 grams a day. I get so half, less than half my body weight. So it's like, you know, I think it's highly overrated if you're already like maintaining what you got. But if you're trying to build muscle mass, then yeah, you know, you want to eat more. But if you're already big, then, you know, to lean up, I don't think it's that big a deal. But we see too many skinny guys, they just don't eat enough. And it's not about like drinking a bunch of protein shakes. That's not the solution. The solution is eating more food. If you're trying to gain, you want to eat more food, clean food. I didn't eat like McDonald's and Chick-fil-A and all that crap. I was eating, like I said, a grass-fed burger. I was eating vegetables, brown rice, sweet potatoes, stuff like that.
So I'll say a couple more things on protein supplements, then we'll move into our next topic. So what my plan is the nice thing is I live literally a block away from my gym. So I literally walk to the gym. It takes me 5 minutes and I walk home. So what I'm planning on doing is cooking my post-workout meal, have it ready, and then when I'm done my workout, just walking home and eating it. I train a lot of people, and most people don't have issues with a whey protein supplement if it's a pure whey protein isolate. So there's 2 types of whey protein on the market. There's an isolate and a concentrate. Most companies will use a concentrate because it's much cheaper than an isolate. The problem with a concentrate is because it's a concentrate, not an isolate, it's going to have a few grams of lactose in it. So lactose is the milk sugar that's naturally found in dairy products. A lot of adult humans are lactose intolerant. There's only going to be a couple grams per scoop of lactose in that whey protein concentrate, but it's going to be enough to cause bloating, indigestion, and things like that. So unless you're someone like me who has like a very finicky digestive system, most people aren't going to have an issue with a whey protein isolate. If it's a pure whey protein isolate, so read the label, make sure it says whey protein isolate. The only other things you want to see in the ingredients list is maybe like natural flavors, stevia. If it's chocolate flavored, you know, they might add something like cocoa powder. You know, if it's strawberry flavored, they might, you know, have like natural strawberry pieces or something like that. When you talked about skinny guys, I kind of disagree on the protein shake thing because I find a lot of skinny guys, their issue is, yeah, they don't eat enough. But number two, eating a lot of clean food is very time consuming. It's very expensive and it's a lot of work. Like meal prep sucks. So I've had a lot of success with, you know, skinny guys who are eating three meals per day, basically what I would do is I'd say, okay, keep eating your three meals per day, and then we're going to add in three shakes. So what I want you to do is for your three shakes, you know, have a good quality whey protein isolate, add in some oatmeal, add in some natural almond butter, add in a scoop of greens powder, and have three of those per day to bump up their calorie needs. The nice thing about that is it's convenient, doesn't require any cooking, it's easy to do. You know, the best case scenario would tell them, hey, eat six meals a day, but a lot of people just aren't willing to do that and just can't afford it. So that's where I think shakes have their place if you can tolerate them. Most people don't have an issue, but it seems like both me and Steve kind of have a major dairy sensitivity.
I think more people have an issue with it than they realize. And like what you said was like, you have inflammation from it, but you've gotten so used to it. And that's kind of the danger thing, because maybe it's still causing inflammation in your body, whether you may not even notice it, but that's not good. The inflammation in your body is not good. But it, you know, with that, you know, as someone like me, when I was skinny and I was trying to build mass, if I could not tolerate it, for me to continue to drink it anyway would have been very, very counterproductive, because it's killing my appetite so much that I didn't want to eat. You see what I'm saying? So if you're a skinny guy and you're drinking these shakes and it makes you feel gassy, makes you feel bloated, and you're not hungry, you don't have an appetite from it, I think that's when it starts getting counterproductive. I'd much rather you eat like a 600 calorie meal instead than
100%. You know, like the take home message of all this is listen to your body, right? So if there's any food that, you know, you're consuming and you don't feel good after consuming it, stop it. Stop eating it, right? Like there's no magic food. Like don't think you have to eat chicken, you know, as a bodybuilder. Like if you eat chicken and you feel terrible after eating it, don't eat chicken, you know, eat fish, eat lean meat, you know, eat eggs. Like there's always options. You know, you can even have goat, you could have venison, you could have a bison, you could have elk, like get creative. So our second question, pre-workout nutrition and pre-workout stimulants. We've gotten a lot of listener questions, you know, about pre-workout supplements, stimulant usage, things like that. So, I mean, I'm a little bit different than Steve. I don't think stimulants are the devil. You know, like I do like to have a cup of black coffee before my workout, just a small, you know, 8-ounce cup. I find, you know, it gives me a nice increase in energy. It increases my focus. There's not too much caffeine in it, so it won't affect sleep. But if you're mega dosing stimulants before your workout, it's just not a good idea. You're giving your body basically a false fight or flight response. It's stimulants trick your body into releasing adrenaline. You know, it'd be the exact same thing as, you know, like you saw a bear and then all of a sudden, you know, like your heart starts racing and you know, you're all revved up to, you know, run and sprint for your life from this bear. Same thing, that stimulants do the exact same thing. The problem with that is if you keep using stimulants, it's almost that whole boy who called wolf thing. You burn out your adrenal glands, you know, because your adrenal glands, they weren't designed to see a bear every single day. You know, they saved that, you know, for a very stressful situation when you needed that. So if you abuse stimulants and you use high dosages of them daily, you're gonna experience adrenal fatigue. It's gonna raise your cortisol levels. It's just gonna cause a whole bunch of issues. So, Steve, what are your thoughts on pre-workout stimulants?
The fascinating thing, Trevor, is when I was an endurance athlete, and what I would do is I had a GPS watch and I had a heart rate monitor, which I put around my chest. I don't know if you've ever used one of those.
Yeah, I have one actually.
You can track your heart rate. So when I would do interval training or a tempo run or something, I'd always see, hey, you know, where's my heart rate at? So Trevor, you're a smart guy. Like based on, you know, you have long, slow distance, tempo runs, you have 1 mile sprints, you've got interval training. So you're a smart guy. What do you think got my heart rate up the highest?
One of those. Whatever's the most intense, so probably intervals.
Exactly, yeah. So when you do an interval training, you do like 1 lap sprint, then you do 1 lap dog, then 1 lap sprint, then 1 lap. So if you did that 8 times, what do you think would happen? Do you think that my heart rate would get higher on the first interval or the eighth interval?
on the 8th, it'd be the highest. Yeah,
exactly.
Probably, for a guy your age, you'd probably get up to around maybe like 130, 150.
Because your body is like a car engine. You're revving it up each time you do an interval, and each time it's revving up harder and harder to the point where it gets, you're hitting that maximum heart rate. So maximum heart rate, let's say, was 180. I was getting my maximum heart rate up to like 177, 178. My girlfriend, who would train with me as well, she was a hell of an athlete. She had just the most amazing genetics. I mean, all her uncles were like professional athletes and shit. She would get her heart rate like 186, 190, which was 5 points higher than her maximum heart rate on paper, you know? So some athletes are able to get their heart rates even above their maximum heart rate. Now, if she were to take a stimulant before running and do those intervals, what do you think would happen? Well,
heart rate would go even higher.
Exactly. And that's not good, because you're hitting your maximum heart rate or going 5 points above it. That's like revving your car engine even more. So if you take a stimulant, now you're revving your car engine more. She's not going to be able to push as hard when she does those runs. So now, like, that's okay. That's with running. That's a good experiment running. But in the weight room, it's the same concept. When you do a set, and you could do this yourself, go out and buy a GPS watch, tie yourself during a set. When you're pushing yourself and you're getting to that last rep, your heart rate starts going up higher and higher and higher, then goes back down. So when you weight train, the same thing happens. So if you're taking a stimulant, your heart rate after that first rep is going to be already higher than it is on your third, fourth, fifth rep. So you're kind of, it's kind of counterproductive. You're not able to push yourself as hard as you could push yourself for longer. And as you work out each set, it's just like the interval training, you're going to basically burn yourself out quicker. So in that aspect, stimulants actually are counterproductive when it comes to fitness. I'm not saying, you know, sometimes you have to use them. If you the only time you can work out is 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, because you got an 8-hour workday, then yeah, sometimes you got to drink your coffee, you know, before your workout to get in your workout in the first place. So sometimes you got to use it. But I'm just saying they're counterproductive when it comes to fitness. And if you do the opposite effect, which is run something like Carterine or SR9009, your heart rate will actually, you'll be able to push your heart rate more with less effort. You'll be able to push your heart rate more with more effort, and your heart rate won't go as much with more effort. So those intervals I was talking about, if you were to take Carterine, it would actually drop your heart rate down where you could actually push more. You'd be actually able to run faster and for longer. And the same thing in the weight room. You'd be actually able to push longer for longer sets. You'd probably be able to knock out an extra rep on those sets where your heart rates are really, really cranking up. So I would run Carterine or SR9009 before I run a stimulant if you want those endurance benefits, if you want to be able to push yourself longer in the gym and get that endurance.
Another thing about stimulants that could either be a benefit or a negative depending on your goals is they crush your appetite. So, you know, that's why if you look at, you know, pretty much every fat burner on the market, it's basically just a caffeine pill, right? Caffeine really does work for cutting appetite. So if you're using stimulants and you're trying to cut, that might be a positive to you, you know, because then, you know, your appetite's reduced. However, it's kind of like that skinny guy is not getting in enough food. A lot of skinny guys are intermittent fasting and they don't even realize it, because they basically, you know, most of them work out before school or whatever, right? So they wake up, they're like, well, what am I going to do? They do what the magazines tell them. They take a pre-workout. They don't eat breakfast. They take a pre-workout. Then they go do their workout. After their workout, they're not hungry because they just had that pre-workout that was loaded with caffeine. And then, you know, they go through their day, you know, they're at school, they're busy, they're meeting with friends. And then finally, you know, dinner time comes around and they eat something. But they basically just intermittent fasted without even realizing it. Cause, you know, they got up, let's say at 6, they got their workout in before, you know, starting work at, you know, 9 or whatever. They work 9 to 5. And they didn't have dinner till 6, and they go to bed at 10 and do it all over again. So they're intermittent fasting without even realizing it. And the problem is they might eat dinner, they might eat, you know, a small snack before bed, and then they go to bed. They only ate 2 meals, I mean, like how many calories can you get in two meals? Maybe, like, even if they're big meals, maybe 1,000 calories in each meal. That's 2,000 calories. That's not enough to put on size. So that's another thing about stimulants. You have to be really careful because they do cut appetite. Do you have anything else to say before we move on?
Well, I've noticed too, Trevor, like, as I've tried stimulants to reduce my own appetite. And I've tried in the past few years, all, you know, I've tried them here and there, taking them in the morning. I've noticed that they're actually less effective for reducing appetite the more you use them. And I think that that has something to do with what you were saying, the, you know, the stressing at your adrenal glands and stuff. Your body just adjusts 100%. To it. So, I mean, I think it's even for that, it'd be pointless. So a fat person listening to this, who's like, yeah, I'm going to go run out and get a stimulants because it's going to reduce my appetite. Yeah, it may do that initially, but your body will very quickly, get used to that. That's why at Starbucks or Panera Bread or any of these places, they always sell coffee, but they also sell lots of danishes and baked goods and stuff and all that shit. And all these fat people, that's what they eat. They have a coffee with a donut or coffee with a pastry. And, you know, it's not really helping your situation.
One more thing about caffeine is it's exactly like you said. The problem with caffeine is it's a drug, and your body builds up a tolerance to it very, very easily. That's why, you know, you see people, they start off drinking a coffee and they drink, you know, like an 8-ounce cup. And then all of a sudden they're getting a medium. And all of a sudden they're getting a large. And all of a sudden they're getting a venti. So it's exactly like you said, you know, like using caffeine as a way to cut your appetite, that's only going to really work for you for a couple of weeks. Then eventually you're going to build up a tolerance to it. You're not going to get that same appetite suppressant. So what I would say is, like, let's say you're doing a 16-week cut. If you want to use, you know, something like a caffeine pill to cut your appetite, save it for the last 5 or 6 weeks where you're trying to get that last bit of fat off and, you know, the hunger is really hitting you, right? You kind of want to save your stimulant usage as like an ace in the hole. So one thing I want to talk a little bit about is pre-workout nutrition. And, like, for me, pre-workout nutrition does not get the attention it deserves. I think pre-workout nutrition is the most important meal of the day. You know, people always say, like, you hear always people talk about post-workout. You hear people talk about, you know, breakfast. Breakfast is overrated. I mean, all of these podcasts we've done on fasting has really explained the fact that, like, there's nothing magic about breakfast. The only reason it's called breakfast is because it's the first meal you eat. Post-workout nutrition, yeah, that's important. But I would argue pre-workout nutrition is more important because pre-workout nutrition is what is going to fuel your body. And that's what's going to determine how you perform. You know, most people, their issue is that they're not performing well in the gym. You know, that's like pre-workout for me, it just makes the most sense. You know, it's kind of like fueling your car before you go on a long road trip. Makes a lot more sense than fueling it once you're done the road trip. Once you're done the road trip, what does it matter? Like, you've already got to the end destination. Like, you hear people talk about post-workout, but post-workout, the workout's already been done. You know, pre-workout just makes more sense to me. Like, you want to eat something that's going to give you good sustained energy. You're going to have good focus. You're going to have good pumps. You're going to be hydrated. What are your thoughts on pre-workout nutrition, Steve?
Well, I mean, it's just so many variables, Trevor. I've tried it all. It just depends on your goal. Like, my goal right now, I'm just maintaining what I got and leaning out. So I'll have, like, before my workouts, which are a lot of high tempo interval type of training, cardio, weight training, stuff like that. I'll have something really light, something really easy to digest, like half a sweet potato about a hour and a half before. And that will basically help me. A big mistake guys make with if they're doing very high intensity workouts is they're like, I always get sick when I do that. I get sick when I do cardio. Well, it's because you're eating too close to your workout. You're not giving you cannot work out when you have shit in your stomach when you're doing those types of exercises. When you're just going to weight train and take 5 minutes between sets, yeah, you can have a meal, you know, no problem, like 15 minutes before your workout. But if you're going to do like a lot of cardio and stuff, you're really going to get your heart rate up. You're just going to throw it up. And so that's what I would do in that situation. But back when I was weight training, powerlifting, trying to build mass, I would have, like I said earlier, a grass-fed burger, a couple eggs, whole eggs, a piece of fruit. That would be a for that. And just for something where you're like doing a maintenance type of meal, a really common one, two eggs, a piece of fruit, and maybe like a bowl of oatmeal. That would be perfect pre-workout. You can have that like 45 minutes to an hour beforehand. And then you can save the piece of fruit or save the sweet potato for your drive to the gym, depending on how far you are from the gym.
The second meal you listed sounds pretty much optimal. So what you want pre-workout is you want something that's high in carbs, moderate in fat, and moderate in protein and low in fat. High carb, moderate protein, low fat. You want it to be moderate in protein and low in fat because protein and fat are very taxing on the digestive system. If you eat something very high fat before your workout, it's just going to sit in your stomach. It's going to cause bloating. It's not going to be what you want. You want something light. So, you know, what Steve said, you know, for protein, what I would do is, you know, maybe like 6 or 7 egg whites and one whole egg. That way, you know, you got a really easily digesting protein source. You got a little bit of fat from that egg yolk. And then for carbs, you know, you want something that digests well. I really like white rice. Oatmeal digests really well for me. Sweet potato digests really well for me. Something like that. You wouldn't want something that's too fibrous. You know, if you're eating like a really high fiber cereal or something like that, that's going to upset your stomach. So, you know, you want something like cream of rice is really good. Oatmeal with, you know, maybe some like frozen berries mixed in, sweet potatoes, white potatoes, rice. What I really like to have is, you know, like I'll have a can of tuna. I'll have some rice, and then I'll just have like maybe like 10 or 15 almonds just for like a little bit of fat to keep my blood sugar levels stable so I don't go hypoglycemic. So something like that. But pre-workout nutrition is basically, it's really individual. You want something that gives you good energy but doesn't make you feel bloated. It's like Steve said, like you want to get something in, but you don't want it to be too much because it's just going to sit in your stomach and you're not going to have a good workout. So you want it to be light on your stomach. So make it carbohydrate based. You want some protein and then keep the fat on the low side. Do you got anything else to add there, Steve?
I actually went to a restaurant. I had a steak and rice and vegetables in a salad one time before my workout. It was a huge mistake. I got to the gym and I was like, fuck, I gotta take a dump. Like as soon as I got to the gym, I'm like, how the fuck am I supposed to do squats when I gotta take a dump? And so like, don't eat a heavy meal like that. Like that's just too much food. Too much food is just gonna sit in your stomach and you're just not gonna be able to get in a good workout.
Well, you're gonna have no energy, right? It's like think about Thanksgiving after you eat like a massive meal. Do you wanna go exercise? No, you wanna lie on the couch and sleep. Yeah. Right. So it's,
that's what lions do. When lions go kill something, they eat it and then they go take a nap. So yeah, think about it that way.
Okay. So now we got two steroid topics for you guys. The first one is 1-tesipinate, also referred to as DHB. So I'm just going to talk about it briefly and then we'll let Steve kind of really get into it because Steve's the steroid guru. I've had a lot of clients ask me about it because on paper, it's a really interesting compound. The anabolic to androgenic ratio is 200 to 200, but it's much more anabolic than it is androgenic. Like it, on paper, it seems that it's very androgenic, but it doesn't seem like it actually is that androgenic in a real world sense. What's really cool about 1-tesip is that it doesn't aromatize into estrogen. So you don't have any issues with, you know, gyno or anything like that or water retention. It kind of seems almost like it's a mix between EQ and Primo is how I would describe it. I've never used it personally, but my clients who have used it have said they love the compound, but the post-injection pain is brutal, like absolutely horrible. I'm not sure why the post-injection pain is so bad because it is a long ester. Maybe Steve, can you explain why the post-injection pain would be so terrible with it?
Yeah, that is actually true. I'm guessing it has something to do with, you know, because it's tied to the septinate ester and it's kind of like the when you do that with EQ, same thing. When you take away the U ester from EQ and you attach to the sip and an ester, it also has a high pip. So that's something to do.
Test sip has no post injection pain. What, like, it just doesn't make sense.
I know, but I'm saying it's like, but that test sip doesn't, but the EQ sipinate version does.
Bolden on sipinate, yeah.
Yeah, the Bolden sipinate does. So it has something to do with that. It's just the makeup of it. But I will say, with DHV, it's, I would say more, I think on paper it's actually 200 to 100. So I'm not sure where you're getting the 200 to 200 number from.
I just looked it up. It's 200, 200.
Okay. Yeah. That's not, because I wrote an article on it a few years ago. And from my research, it's actually 200. And actually, that's on paper. In real life, I would say it was more 225. Very, very little androgenic properties with it. So it's kind of like Tren. In terms of being, it's kind of like Tren's baby brother without the androgen part. So it is kind of like Primo, I would say, but to use in a real life, and I have used it before, and it is true that it does have a lot of pip. So it's pretty much a 5-alpha reduced form of Equipoise. So, and it's basically a DHT version of Equipoise. So that's pretty much how I would describe it. Kind of like Tren's baby brother and a DHT version of Equipoise. And Equipoise doesn't even aromatize very much anyway, because that's such a very, very little aromatization with the U-ester of Equipoise. So this is, it's kind of an interesting one, but it's not that special. And I agree with you. I would characterize it as similar to Primo. I would just run Primo, and Primo has less pip. If you get underground Primo from a good source, it actually has less pip than DHP. So
Steve, I just looked up the article I read where it said it was 200 to 200. I read the comments at the end of the article. Everyone said whoever wrote this article is a moron. It's actually 200 to 100. So you were right. My mistake, yeah, I know.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what's on paper. But like, I really, like, that's the thing with on paper numbers. It doesn't translate to real life anyway. So that number really doesn't mean anything. So I've used it, and like from other people have used it, I would say it's more like 150 to 25. That's the, that is the ratio, real life ratio. So it is slightly more anabolic than testosterone and like a quarter as androgenic. That's the way I would describe it.
Yeah. The problem with these on paper anabolic to androgenic ratios is, it's like Steve said, they don't really give you the full story. It's like on paper, D-ball and Anadrol aren't very androgenic, but we know from real world experiences, those are both very androgenic steroids. So I think that's basically it for one test sip. In my personal opinions, I agree with Steve. I would probably just run EQ or Primo, or run both EQ and Primo. One test sip is going to cause terrible post-injection pain. It's also very expensive. So it's also very hard to find a source as well. So that it's what it is though, Steve, right? Like people, they hear about these exotic compounds and they think like, oh, this must be the secret. But no, most of these really exotic compounds are just overrated.
I've used like every steroid out there. At this point, I'm just like so over it. Like, it's so exciting when you just start out trying different steroids. But once you've used them all, you realize it's just icing on the cake. You know, your diet
basics. Yeah.
Yeah. Your diet and training is going to take you where you need to go. Like it's like what Mark Lobliner said in our last podcast. In 20 years, the longest he's taken off from the gym is 3 days. It's consistency. It's building that 2 pounds a year of quality muscle over a 20-year span. And he gained 40 pounds in that 20 years. That's what separates the successful people from the weak. It's not the steroids. Although the steroids are the icing on the cake, but they're not the cake itself.
So our next steroid topic is check drops. Just like DHB, this is kind of a bit of an exotic compound. I got quite a few listener emails asking about check drops. Again, it's something I've never used personally, so I can't talk about personal experiences. Hopefully Steve has used it so he can talk about his personal experiences. I know it's a very aggressive drug, and a lot of powerlifters really like it. I don't know much about it though, Steve. Give me the 411 check drops.
This isn't one that I've used before. I actually had an opportunity to use it, but I didn't want to mess with it because it really doesn't benefit you very much. If you're a gym rat, it will not benefit you. I feel like it's one of those things you take if you're like a boxer, MMA fighter or something. You take it right before and it gives you this quick aggression. And if you're like a competitive power lifter at a high level, you take it and it gives you like a boost kind of. But it's a very, very dangerous compound and it's very, very liver toxic. So it's, you know, if you were to use it, let's say every day for more than 2 weeks, you're talking about major, major liver strain. And I really don't think that it's worth it at all. Basically, it's not produced anymore. I believe Upjohn used to produce it and some underground like dealers and stuff still produce it, but there really isn't much enough demand for many sources. I don't think any of our approved sources on our forum even have it because there isn't just enough demand. So, and it's very expensive as well. So it's not going to do you any good, like I said, unless you're like a competitive MMA fighter and you want like this quick boost beforehand. You're going to use like 5 milligrams, 30 minutes before, maybe 30 to 60 minutes before, whatever you're going to do. And it's going to give you this crazy aggression. It's just this, it's basically going to turn you into a beast, but it's not something you take like every day for a cycle that's going to like increase muscle mass or anything like that. So it's a little bit of a weird one. I would say if you had an opportunity to use it, I would definitely say don't use it. Like I said, I don't think it's worth it.
Got you. So it's not like a steroid that you'd use like as like a 6 week kickstart to a cycle. It's basically something to use on like a 1 day event. If you're like a power lifter and you want to just get crazy aggressive before your lift, or if you're like a fighter and you want it before like a big fight, something like that.
Yeah. It's not a stimulant, but it does like basically hit your central nervous system. It's like an androgen type of overload on your androgen receptors, you know? So, but it's not something that you're going to gain muscle from. No, absolutely not. It's just, it's going to increase your aggression and performance that particular day, taking it pre. So if you're like, you know, like if you're competing as like an athlete, like in soccer or football and stuff, you don't want to use it because it's going to probably fuck you up more than help you. Like, you know, it's going to just basically strain your organs so much. It's actually going to be counterproductive. So you don't want to use it unless you're like, you need some crazy ass, you're like going to have like a street fight or something. Then you would use it. You know, that would be the only time I would use it.
I'm just thinking like a soccer player, like taking it, like flipping out and like flipping over like the Gatorade cooler. And
you'd like probably like get a red card, like 5 minutes into the game, or you'd be out. So it would be kind of pointless to take it. It's not going to help you run faster. It's not going to help you kick the ball farther or anything. It's just going to make you more of a nutcase out there.
So our next topic is a relationship topic. So this is something I kind of want a bit of your life advice on, Steve. So I was talking with a friend lately and I have really, really high standards, like super high. And
yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah. Okay. You should feel very special then that I chose you to be the co-host of my podcast. But anyways, so I was talking to this friend and they're a little bit older than me and they basically said, Trevor, are you perfect? And I said, no, far from perfect. And they said, is anyone perfect? I said, well, besides Jesus, no. They're like, exactly. They're like, you're looking for perfection, but perfection doesn't exist. So my question for you, Steve, is, I mean, you're a little bit older than me. When you were younger, did you have like super high standards when it comes to, you know, dating or relationships? And then eventually did you kind of realize like, there's no perfect person, and a successful relationship is about meeting a good person who's not perfect, knowing that they're not perfect, knowing you're not perfect, and working together to try to help each other be better people.
Absolutely. And that wasn't even when I was that much younger. It was you know, in the past few years. But like, here's what you need in a relationship. And this is, you know, going to come to a shock to a lot of people. First of all, you need crazy chemistry on both ends. Like, you need to be able to just want to rip each other's clothes off on both ends. You can't just have one. It can't be one sided where you're super attracted to her. Or she's super attracted to you. It has to be both sided because, you know, if you're like a couple months into a relationship and there's no fire there, then how's it going to be a year from now or 2 years from now? It's going to just fire is going to be gone. You cannot maintain a good relationship without that fire. The person has to be good. I would say like, okay, I used to like be so obsessed, like, oh, this person has to be into fitness. This person has to have my diet and all this stuff. You have to kind of let that shit go. Like, you got to just accept the fact that nobody, you can't try to date someone who's you. And that's the mistake that we make. We want someone who's our religion. We want someone who's our lifestyle. We want someone who goes to the gym the way we do. We want someone, you know, all that shit. And you know, there's nobody like that. You're not ever going to be able to date yourself. So just, you need someone with that chemistry, and you need someone who's a good person. You need someone who's going to be punctual, who's going to treat you right, who's not going to cheat on you, who's going to be honest. Those are the qualities you should look for. But like Trevor, you know, at your age, it's normal to go through what you're going through and be so fucking picky, because I'm sure you've dumped girls because they haven't fit exactly your standards or what you're looking for. And, you know, who knows? It could have not worked out or it could have worked out, but it's nothing to be ashamed of.
The problem with my generation, Steve, and I'm guilty of this 100%, is that no one in my generation wants to commit to anything because they're worried that there might be something better, right? It's like, if you invite someone, hey, do you want to go do this on Saturday? No one will ever say yes. They'll say, oh, I'll think about it. I'll try to make it, because in the back there, they're thinking, well, what if something better comes up? You know, and it's the same thing with relationships. It's the same thing why very few people in my generation actually are boyfriend and girlfriend rather than just seeing one another, because they're worried that, hey, maybe there's something better out there that I haven't.
You're saying you're like that, or the people you're dating are like that?
Everyone. I'm like that. Yeah. You know, I think
you're young though. I used to be like that too, but it's natural. You want to basically, you know, see what's out there and stuff. I don't feel like you're not even close to the point where you've hit the point where you've been through it all. You've banged a bunch of women. You've, you know, dated different types of religions, races, ethnicities, to the point where you're like, shit, okay, now I'm ready for that one special person. So you haven't hit that point yet. So you're not going to hit it until you're at least like 35, 40. Like, so like, why even stress out over it? Just do your thing now. Don't, you know, get into a serious relationship. You're not ready right now. You don't have the time. Once you graduate and you're stable and stuff, and then the women will be flocking to you. So there's really no reason for someone at your age to even worry about that. So I would say you're not doing anything wrong, and that's okay. I would say, like, just, you know, just, I would try different types of soup, you know, and then kind of experiment. Listen, the women your age, you're not going to commit either. So there's no point in doing it. Like, women at your age, they're going to cheat on you and do all kinds of shit. That's how women are in their 20s. You got to wait till the women mature and are mentally ready to settle down. They're not in their 20s.
The other thing that worries me about what you're saying, though, Steve, is like, okay, you don't want kids, but let's say someone did want kids. If you don't wait until, you know, you're 35, 40 to actually, you know, seriously date someone and then eventually get married, a lot of women and a lot of like, do you want to have kids when you're in your 40s? Like, think about that. You know, like, that's pretty late to have kids. So that's the only reason why I'm kind of thinking about this, is because, you know, like, I'm thinking, you know, if I want to have kids, which I don't know if I do or I don't, you know, I don't really want to be having kids in my 40s. Like, ideally I'd have them, you know, early 30s.
All right. So like, set it like, didn't, that's fine. Mid 30s. That's fine. You're only 25. So what are you worried about? You got 10 years to find someone. I mean, really, like, if you meet someone special, sit 1 year into that relationship, you can hit her with the marriage question. Give it 1 year, and that's fair to her. That 1 year mark, either you're going to go ahead and ask her to marry you, or you're going to go ahead and move on, because it's not fair to drag a woman on. So I'd say you got plenty of time. So what do you?
Yeah, and I guess like when you find the right person, you'll know.
I mean, like, it's just a matter of, even if, I don't know, man.
How long have you been dating your current girlfriend, Steve?
Maybe 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah.
Do you have any intentions on getting married or no?
Yeah, I mean, she's never set foot in the gym one time. And if 5 years ago you told me I'd be in love with a girl who never set foot in the gym one time, I would laugh at you. But I don't care. That she does her things, I do my things. She doesn't have to like do what I like, and vice versa. Like, it doesn't have to be. I'm not trying to find someone who's like me.
Does she do like yoga or Pilates or anything though?
She's never once did that shit. Never. But she likes to do active stuff. Like, she likes sports. She likes to go bicycling and stuff like that. But
okay,
no,
so at least she's like, that's what I was gonna say. Like, I couldn't see you dating a couch potato, but I could totally see you dating someone who's active, but just maybe.
No, she's not even that active, but I'm saying she will do really? That stuff, but she's not active. No, but I mean, she's just a wonderful person, and she's respectful. She treats me right. And we have amazing chemistry, and I haven't had that before. So it took me, up till my late 30s, almost 40, to find someone like that. So, cause I was engaged before, and this girl and I, we just never had that chemistry from day one. We were kind of more like friends. There wasn't that crazy chemistry. So it's like, stop listening to the bullshit that you have to find someone, even though she would go with me to the gym and stuff like that. Don't listen to the bullshit that you have to have all this shit in common and stuff. It boils down to chemistry. That's the number one thing. Like, do you want to be in a 5-year marriage and be in a sexless marriage? That's the question you ask yourself.
Honestly, Steve, all these guys fantasize about going to the gym with their girlfriends or their wives. I hated it. It sucked. Like, I like going to the gym either by myself or with a guy, because when you're with a guy, you got that like aggression going, it's like a competition. It's like, okay, he squatted 3 plates. I got to squat 3 plates and a 10, like, when you're with like your girlfriend or your wife, they're females. They're not that aggressive, right? And they're like, "Oh, good job, honey. Good set." And it's like, "No, don't tell me that. Tell me like, okay, you could have gone 7. Like, pick it up. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it it seems great, but when you actually do it, it's not that great."
No, I see some people like go to the gym and stuff with their spouse. It's nice once in a while, but like not like every time.
Yeah, like I mean, like yeah. Maybe like yeah.
I've dated girls who are like way even more athletic than me, and they always want to do their own thing. They'll go do their own thing. I'll do my thing at the gym, and then we'll be like, okay, meet me, at the front in an hour, and then we'll leave together. So I mean, even in that situation, but I would say my recommendation for you, Trevor, or any other 25-year-old. Is try a lot of different soups while you're young. And, I'm not saying go like add like 50 notches to your bedpost, but I would say like you need to, experiment with different things and different types of people. And if you live in a area that doesn't have very many single people, that can be hard to do. So you need to basically like move somewhere that has a lot of single young people that are in your age. You can't live somewhere where there's a bunch of old people and think you're going to meet people. You have to like actually move somewhere else. But I think where you live, there's a lot of young single people.
It's not at all.
Oh, you don't think so?
I live in Winnipeg. It has a very Mennonite based and farming community. A lot of the people my age are already married. Here in Winnipeg, it's very normal. You get married when you're 18, 19. At 20, you start having kids, and then you work on the farm. That's just kind of like...
And you're in poverty the rest of your life.
Yeah.
But at some point when you graduate, move to like a big city, man, where you're...
I'm looking into doing my PhD in Seattle.
Oh, man, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
That'd be perfect. So, I mean, that would be a good opportunity for you to do that.
You can come. We can watch a Seahawks game.
Yeah. The only problem with Seattle is there's a huge... ratio of single men versus single females, because a lot of young men move to Seattle to get into music and get into those types of technology industry that they have there. So there's a big imbalance. There's not as many like single women as single men. That's the only problem with a city like Seattle. And you'll notice that along the coast, because San Francisco is the same way. It has a big tech base. So there's a lot of single young men move there to get into the Silicon Valley, the technology industry. So there isn't as many women that are in those industries. So that's the one dilemma. But you're in a situation where you're a really good shape, you're a good looking guy. So even in an environment like that, there's still enough single women to kind of where you can wet your beak with them. You know, but some places like New York City, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, those eastern cities in the United States have a lot more single females. I mean, like, you can go to New York City and like, have a date with a different girl every night. There's so many more single women than men. It just has to do with the jobs that are there and the industries.
Steve, you should start your own dating show.
I should do it with David Wygant.
I would listen to it. I'd subscribe to the podcast.
I mean, I'm not like an expert.
Call it like Date Talk with Steve. Sunday night date talk with Steve. And you'd have all these like people call in and be like, "Hey, Steve, I've been dating my wife for 10 years now and I love her.
Yeah.
But the spark's just not there."
You know what it is though, Trevor? I read a lot of like dating books. I watch a lot of dating shows. I'm just fascinated by dating. And when I used to date, I love just like going out on dates with people and just like, you know, picking their brains and stuff. It's just fascinating to me, the whole dating thing.
You know what I've been reading a lot of lately is books on Navy SEALs, books on people who have completed 50 triathlons and learning about the power of the mind. Because like, I feel like eventually you kind of hit like a knowledge ceiling on how much you can learn about like nutrition and training and all that sort of stuff. But what makes the most amazing athletes isn't their nutrition, isn't their training. I mean, genetics are a component of it, but it's really their mind, you know, and how they're able to push themselves so hard and so long and never give up and never let those negative thoughts get to them. And it's just, that's what I've really been reading a lot on lately.
Well, I mean, our next topic kind of gets into that. Do we have enough time for it?
We got 2 or 3 minutes. So I'm just going to basically say it quick. The reason I wanted to bring up this next topic is very important. And our last topic is the importance of setting goals. So I'm just going to give a shout out to two of my clients, Lynette and Sherwin. I know they listen to this podcast. I've been training them for a while. And here's the thing. When you have a goal, it creates work ethic. Remember back in high school, if you had an assignment that was due in 4 weeks, you didn't start working on it, right? But if that assignment's due tomorrow, you're working on it, you know, like you're focused. So that's the good thing about having goals. Now, I understand competing is not for everyone. Powerlifting is not for everyone. But you need to set some sort of goal. So basically what I said to Sharon and Lynette is, hey, I know your anniversary is coming up. It's in 4 months. I know, you know, competing isn't really your thing. Why don't you book a couple's photo shoot? Why don't we, you know, diet you down, get you guys ready for this photo shoot so you can get some really awesome photos. So then that way, you know, when you have grandkids, you can kind of show them these photos and say, hey, look, we used to be pretty freaking jacked back in the day. So they love the idea. I introduced them to a really good photographer I know here in Winnipeg, and they dyed it down. And that was the most productive 4 months I've ever trained them because they had a goal. They had a set point in mind. So I don't know what your goal is. I don't know, but setting goals is really important. And Steve, I'm sure you remember, you know, back in your days when you were competing, if you knew you had a competition coming up, you wouldn't miss workouts, you wouldn't miss meals, you know, you were focused, you had like a razor-like focus. So do you have anything to comment on that? And then I'll close it.
Well, not just that, but every time you go to the gym, like on your way to the gym, visualize what you want to accomplish. Visualize what you're going to work on. Visualize your workouts. You visualize who you're going to run into at the gym because you know the regulars are at your gym. And it's amazing. You'll visualize everything and then you'll get there. You'll do it. You'll see those people that you actually, you know, were visualizing. You'll get that workout done. and then you'll leave there. And that's the best accomplishment you could do. And it's very important to do that, setting goals and, you know, achieving those goals, because there's so many days where you just don't feel like going to the gym. And, you know, you end up going, and then on your way home, you're like, damn, I'm so glad I went. I almost didn't go. So, I mean, by doing that, it kind of gives you that motivation and that sense of satisfaction afterwards. And that's those endorphins that you get released after your workout. So all works all together, but it's very important with anything, not just with fitness, but with anything in life. Set your goals, ask for what you want. You want a girl to take a girl on a date? You ask the girl for a date. You want to get a raise at work? You ask your boss for a raise. You know, you want help with fitness? You come to our forum and you ask, or you ask Trevor or I for a question, and we'll present it on the podcast. So if you ask, you will receive. If you don't ask, you won't receive. So it's very important to do all that.
Yeah. And I mean, like, going back to fitness, like, you don't have to make the goal overly serious. Like, you could just make it like a charity run or something like that. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, like a big photo shoot or a big bodybuilding competition. But even if, you know, hey, I'm doing this Thanksgiving run in 2 months that, you know, people have pledged money for, and, you know, I'm raising $1,000 for breast cancer, it's going to light that fire under your butt. You know, you're going to say, hey, I don't want to look pathetic out there. You know, like, I'm doing this for a good cause. I'm raising $1,000. Like, I'm going to give it my everything I got. So have fun with the goal too. You know, like, if you've never done a half marathon before, find a local half marathon that's for a good cause and say, hey, this is a new goal for me. You know, like, there's lots and lots of charity events. I know, like, there's charity, like, CrossFit competitions. I know there's charity, like, yoga things. Like, maybe it'll be like a 5-hour long yoga class to raise money for breast cancer or things like that. I know my gym, every now and then, they do like a 5-hour long spin class that raises money for some sort of charity or something. So yeah, get creative with it. It's been another really good episode. For your host, Trevor Caritzen, for my co-host, Steve Smee, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Mm-hmm.